In Vancouver, I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. The author and novelist Billy Livingston joins me now. She's just published a new collection of short stories, Greedy Little Eyes. 10 stories are contained herein, and they explore the universal need for connection. We meet two fiercely courageous young girls, a flighty mom who ignores her own daughter for her friend, and then takes the friend to Las Vegas to pursue a career in dance. We see a journalist questioning her own morals and ethics as she visits a friend in New York who's in the midst of an affair with a married man. There are other fascinating characters, all of whom we seem to know in that they're accessible. Maybe we see them around here in Vancouver, maybe we know them, but deep down they're all a little more complicated, a little more colorful, and certainly interesting. Greedy Little Eyes, which is also the title of one of the stories in the book, is published by Vintage Canada. The website for more is billylivingston.com. Her previously, her previous critically acclaimed books were Going Down Swinging and Cease to Blush. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Billy Livingston. Good morning, Ms. Livingston.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. How long have you lived in Vancouver?
Most of my life. There's been a little back and forth between here and Toronto, but I was born in Ontario, but grew up mostly in Vancouver.
And I guess it wasn't your choice to come to Vancouver, right? Your parents brought you here?
Yeah. When I was pretty young.
Looking back, I mean, you obviously like the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think your writing would have changed if you'd lived elsewhere?
Well, probably. I think we're all shaped maybe more than we realize by the place we're in, and you know the people we spend time with, and you know everything we interact with ends up shaping our mental furniture. There's a little in Going Down Swinging. I wrote a little about Toronto. You know, it's still you spend time someplace and it becomes a part of you.
You seem to be, having read some of the stories in the book, that this place factors in as a setting. You mention it, and it for me, that's what made the book, some of the stories, I should say, in the book, familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the places that you mentioned in Vancouver. Is that safe to say, I mean, that where you are factors into where the stories take place, perhaps?
Yeah, I really wanted to make Vancouver, you know, another character in these books, because there's certain things about Vancouver being a port city that affects us in a way that, you know, maybe people in Toronto aren't so affected by things on the downtown east side. I think the drug, you know, some of the drug trade and stuff, some of the way people are affected, you know, it has very much to do with being a port city.
How do you think Vancouver is viewed? I mean, I know I'm asking the author.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, say you're from outside, how would you think Vancouver looked after reading this? I know that the one of the characters, that German reporter,
mm-hmm.
I guess she thought of Vancouver as a dark city. She was writing a piece on dark travel and
right.
including Vancouver,
because her thing was going to places that were beautiful tourist destinations that had a dark underbelly.
Yeah, and is that how you view the city?
I think that's sort of the interesting kind of, you know, inner schism with Vancouver is it is so beautiful, and people come here and think of, you know, the mountains and just the coastline, and you know it's like not to sound too odd, but it's like a really beautiful woman that ends up having a strange dark past.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of things that people don't want to think about with Vancouver, and a big part of that is the downtown east side, and, you know, we've got a lot of gang stuff here, too. And there's also just the things that we hear of you know, some of the wealthier classes in the city, because there's a lot, you know, quite a bit of wealth in the city, and, you know, every now and then somebody decides that he can't keep up with the lifestyle that he's chosen, and kills himself and his family, and there is that sort of strange darkness lurking that probably is part of every big city.
In one of the stories, I can't remember which one, I think it's the one after the first one. No, I think it's in the first story,
mm-hmm.
Before I Would Ever Hurt You.
you
make mention of a 50s diner in East Vancouver. Is there one that you go to maybe that you were thinking of when you wrote that?
Well, I didn't have a specific. I'm just, when I'm over on Commercial Drive, I notice, I can't think, there is a diner over there, but I was kind of doing a little hybrid of places I've seen in East Van mixed with, you know, Sophie's Cosmic Cafe and Kit's, and there is that, there's sort of a pleasure in Vancouver in having, you know, having these cafes that are kind of kitschy like that.
Yeah. What part of the city are you from?
The last few years I've lived just in the kind of border of Kits and what's one over from Fairview Slopes.
Yeah. You know, that's the funny thing about Vancouver that we, I guess, those of us that live here that we never think about is that how different all the parts of the city are.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like a microcosm of the country.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Kits and you mentioned Fairview.
Yeah.
They're right next door to each other.
Yep.
But they're very different.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Did you always want to write growing up?
I did. That's why it's kind of a funny a question I don't know how to answer when people say, when did you start writing? Because I always did it. It was almost a nervous tic when I was, you know, when I got old enough to have employment. It was something I did to kind of, you know, keep myself centered. And, you know, the difference came in learning that somebody would actually publish any of it. And I could call myself a writer instead of whatever I was calling myself at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you make a living from it?
I think I make half a living from it.
Yeah.
I work in the film business. I've just come off it's only 3 weeks, but it felt like a really long job because the days are so long on a film set as a stand-in. So I end up, you know, stopping. I'm in the middle of a novel now, but I just felt like I couldn't, as George Bush said, put food on my family.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
to stop and do, you know, I don't know if you've worked in film before, but it's a minimum 12-hour day. And so much is shot out in Langley, which is, close to an hour out of the city. So you drive way out there and work 13 hours and drive the hour back. So this is my first day off the job. So I'm feeling a bit foggy-headed.
And because you were away from, say, the writing, I'm assuming that you didn't write in that 3 weeks.
No.
Yeah.
No.
When do you go back to it? Do you go back to it right away?
Well, it'll take me probably a couple of days to kind of come down because you're in such a thick crowd of people working with the film crew for those times. So it takes a while to get your quiet equilibrium back, I think. And I need that to write because I like to go into almost a dreamscape, you know, when you write, so that all the sort of odd things in your head can come in unfiltered, and you can worry about whether they work or not later.
When you're not writing, do you think about writing?
Yeah. Well, I think about the people that I'm writing. I think about what they might have meant when they said whatever I wrote them saying. I think about what that meant and what it says about them, and then I make a note so I don't forget to go back and explore that a little more.
And when you start writing, whether it's a short story or novel,
mm-hmm.
What comes first, the story or the characters?
The characters.
Yeah.
The voice comes first. Although sometimes, with the title story, with Greedy Little Eyes, that came from, there was a voice first, but there was also the, I don't know if you, do you remember in the early 90s there was an artist named Rick Gibson who announced he was going to squash this rat between two big brick cinder blocks, and it was going to be performance art, and that's sort of what I act out, you know, play out in the story.
Yeah.
So he was chased by animal activists, and they were on the verge of killing him because he said he was going to kill this rat because it would be a more humane way of dying than the usual way that rats go, which is being fed to somebody's snake. But, you know, so the voice comes, and then it sort of plays into some odd thing that's sort of dancing around in the back of my head.
Now, do you work differently, say, if it's a short story or a novel?
Well, yeah, because you have so much more time in a novel to explore things, so you can slow down and live with the people longer. in a story, you know, you're trying to take the what really is kind of a fleeting moment, and that moment is the story, and really delve into it and sort out what led up to it and potentially what the result of it is. And in a novel, the other thing is, in a novel, you know, it's a job that you get to go back to every day. So you get to keep living with these people and understand them for a couple of years. And in a story, you know, the bulk of it is going to be probably finished in a week or two, and then you can keep, you know, keep at it. But it is a different, really different feeling, I think.
Do you have to like your characters? I mean, you mentioned writing a novel that you live with them for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
One assumes that when you live with someone, you have to like them.
Well, I think you find a way to like them in the same way that, I don't know, you almost become, you become their, almost a relative of them, and try to understand what makes them the way they are, even when they're behaving horribly. You try to understand their humanity so that, you know, it's, for instance, in the story where the narrator is accosted by a street person, you know, it's rather than just think of them as a straight, you know, make yourself feel better, that's what the story is,
mm-hmm.
and rather just think of them as some crazy anonymous person, there's something, you try to find their humanity in there so that you, they become, you know, three-dimensional instead of just a cardboard cutout. And I think in order to do that, you have to find something to love in them in a way. Sort of, you know, I see that with actors. The best, to me, when an actor is playing a villain, I think the actors who do it best find a way to try to understand why this person is so awful. Even if it's a rapist or a murderer, they try to, you know, because nobody believes they're horrible. They tend to do the things they do as a, you know, it's a reaction, and there's so much fear and anxiety behind the awful things that people do. And so part of it, I think, in creating somebody who's a complete person who's doing awful things is to understand all that fear and anxiety and have if not a sympathy, a kind of, as a Southern Christians like to say, you know, love the sinner, not the sin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
The critic in the Globe and Mail,
mm-hmm.
Said that the stories in the book don't really have what you call a traditional ending.
Mm-hmm.
Is that deliberate on your part? Do you do that consciously?
I suppose I didn't think about it. I wouldn't have thought that. I did read the review, and it was a very kind review.
Yeah.
But I suppose that surprised me a little, because they seemed, for me, as the writer, they just seemed to come to a natural conclusion, an organic ending, but perhaps for the reader, they may not necessarily. They may have felt like they just got a peek inside a window and didn't get to, you know, to reach some ultimate conclusion. But in my feeling is you never do really get to. We, you know, when we know our friends and family, and we never know ultimately what the true ending is, because everything continues on.
That's what life is, I suppose.
Yeah, it's just a long, it's a continuation.
My favorite ending is I don't know if I'm giving anything away. I won't tell you what story. Well, you'll know what story it is. The little girl, she walks past her dad in the driveway.
Oh, right.
I mean, days after reading that, I'm still thinking about that.
Oh.
You know, I don't know why.
Oh, thank you for saying
yeah.
so. I'm glad.
The people in the book,
mm-hmm.
they seem normal, and, mm-hmm. and I said in the intro that we seem to know who they are,
mm-hmm.
Yet their lives aren't normal. There's something in their life that's extraordinary almost.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point of the book, I suppose, that these are people that we're supposed to know, yet they have these extraordinary parts in their life, right?
Well, when you were saying that, you sort of touched on something that I think is very true. You know, there I've forgotten how you worded it, but you know, essentially there really aren't, we think of simple people, but there aren't any simple people.
No.
And the ordinary is complicated when you scratch the surface. So like, for instance, that first story, Before I Would Ever Hurt You, the seed of that story came from, you know, I was at work. I was, you know, being a stand-in again on a film set, and one of the camera guys came back from lunch looking just shaken and upset because he had just gotten a call on his cell phone that a really close friend of his was dead. She went with her boyfriend and moved to Vancouver Island, and he shot her. And he said, nobody knows, it's really unclear about what happened. Nobody knows why he shot her, but he seems like he just went nuts. And as near as we can tell, he didn't mean to kill her because they didn't have a phone, and they didn't have a car. So he shot her in the leg, and she would have lived, but there was no means of them getting help, so she bled to death. And he asked me if I would, he just was having such a hard time getting his head around it, you know, what it meant, and he asked me if I would write a story about it. And I said, you don't mind if I write about this? Because it won't be those people. And he said, I don't care, I just need it, I need to have a story. I need to understand this in some way. And that's how that came about. So he was just, you know, an ordinary guy, and presumably the people that were there on the island to all of their friends were ordinary people. So he tried to figure out what brings somebody to that brink where, you know, it all goes sideways and black and bloody.
Do you find that for yourself? I mean, you're an ordinary person. I mean, you have this. You're well known as a writer, but you, deep down, you're an ordinary person.
Mm-hmm.
That you understand life. That your life sort of comes into focus, maybe a little clearer, because you do this sort of introspection. Perhaps you do this investigation through your writing.
Well, I guess that's probably true. You know, you take people from your life, and you build these sort of collage characters, and the more you delve into them and try to understand them, the more you start to feel anyway as though you have a sympathy and an understanding for people in your family or, you know, friends in your life, rather than just becoming angry with them or dismissing them outright. You try to sort out, you know, who they were. Sometimes when you at work or just maybe going into a store, for instance, and you've got to deal with somebody who is just such a, can I say asshole?
Sure.
but, you know, it's easy to just say, and mentally toss them aside or become furious and dwell on it all day long. But sometimes it really helps to think, it's hell to be, you know, having to deal with this person, but more hellish would have to be being that person, because they're in that head all the time. They never get to escape. You get to walk away, but they don't.
Yeah. How should we read this book? Are you asked that? I mean, what I did when I got the book, I read the first story. Mm-hmm. It didn't get me. The first page. So I skipped and went, I can't remember if I went to the second or the third story, mm-hmm. but I went around and then I came back to the first. Is that how we're supposed to read it, do you think? Or?
Well, I guess everybody's different. I think, you know, with stories you can do that. They're their own separate morsels. So, you know, with this collection anyway, you know, you don't need to have read the first story in order to get anything out of the sixth story, you know. So I find myself, when I read other story collections, that I get more out of them when I don't keep you know, read them like a novel, like sit down and in an afternoon and read them back to back. I get more out of stories when I read, you know, one at a time and just let it sit with me for a while and read something else the next day. But everybody's different, I suppose.
Now, who puts all this together, like, you know, the way that it's put together? Do you have a say that,
yeah,
that story goes in that part of the book rather than in another part, say?
Yeah, Random House is pretty, they're pretty, they give the writer a lot of leeway, and you know, there's certainly a discussion there, but they didn't change the order. My editor looked at it, and, you know, I was trying to find something with a flow, and I think the only thing she commented on was, there's two stories that have a mother who kind of goes off the rails, so she said, let's not put those two, you know, right close together. Spread them out a bit so that there's, you know, different sensibilities in between them. But other than that, you know, I just tried to put them together in a way that there was some sort of rhythm to them. But, you know, I'm not a story Nazi. People can read them in whatever they would, you know, whatever they feel comfortable with. I'm not bothered that you skipped around until you found something that you felt most compelled by.
Yeah. What do you think this collection represents, say, about your career or where you are in your career?
Well, it's interesting because you know, publishers aren't—they're not jumping for joy when an author says, "I want to do a short story collection," because you typically, short stories don't sell a lot. So I like writing them and I like reading them, and I, you know, Random House was open to publishing them, and they were really behind it. But I had, you know, I had expected that there probably wouldn't, you know, I would be lucky if they got reviewed, because there's so many books and so little review space right now. But it's been a really lovely reception that people have given it. And, you know, it may mean more to my life as a writer than I had anticipated. People sure have been much more open to it than I had expected. You know, you try to go in and not, you know, just not expect anything.
Yeah.
So it's been really nice so far.
Yeah, I don't read fiction much.
Yeah. And what do you read mostly? Nonfiction.
Yeah, nonfiction.
Yeah.
I read the paper and
uh-huh.
go from there.
Right.
But I really enjoyed the book. So.
Oh, thank you.
And I enjoyed the conversation today. Congratulations on the collection, and continued good luck with it.
Thank you very much, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
The same. The website for more is billylivingston.com. The book is called Greedy Little Eyes. It's published by Vintage Canada. Its author, Billy Livingston, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.